Gertrude. Her name is Gertrude.
What? Where does Ethel come from?
Ethel Charles.
You both wrote Ethel?
Hey there, welcome to season 15 of She Builds Podcast, where we share stories about women in the design and construction field, one lady at a time.
This season theme is Collective Impact, exploring AEC organizations and professionals shaping a more inclusive and innovative built environment.
As always, we are not experts. We are just sharing stories about the information that we find. As friends, having a fun conversation. If you find an error, send us an email and we will all continue learning.
Okay. On today's episode, we're going to talk about Gertrude Leverkus, a British architect and the Royal Institute of British Architects organization. I'm Lizzie Rahr, having a spot of tea in Chicago, Illinois.
I'm Nurjeri Rivas, nursing a cold in Houston, Texas.
And I'm Jessica Rogers, craving some fish and chips based out of Miami, Florida.
Okay, so today our story starts in Germany. On September 26, 1898, Gertrude Wilhelmine Margaret Leverkus was born in Oldenburg, Germany. So Oldenburg is near Bremen, which is in the northwest of Germany, and that was Gertrude's parents' hometown.
Ooh, we're in Germany today. Fun. Hallo, Deutschland.
Hallo, or guten Tag.
Hallo, Deutschland. Gertrude's dad, Otto, had left Germany and gone to Manchester in the UK 20 years ago and got British citizenship. He then got married to Ida Christine Rosalia Schmidt, Gertrude's mom, in 1881. They had two children, William and Elsie, and then Otto's work as an export merchant took him around Europe, and the family lived in Spain for many years.
Hola, España.
Ooh, we are really going international this episode.
Gertrude was 15 years younger than her sister Elsie, and shortly after she was born, the family moved to Manchester, and her younger sister Dorothy, or Dolly, was born 18 months after her.
Hello, England.
Cheerio.
In 1910, the family moved to Forest Hill, a neighborhood in London with a large German community. Gertrude attended Sydenham High School there.
That's nice that she was close to her roots.
Yeah.
It sounds like all of the daughters were encouraged to pursue education and careers. Her oldest sister, Elsie, studied art at the Manchester School of Art and went on to become an artist. Her younger sister, Dolly, went on to study medicine at the London Medical School for Women in 1927. Gertrude's father encouraged her to study architecture. She liked drawing, and so in 1915, he saw a letter in the newspaper that said women could be architects now, and he thought that would be a great career path for her.
This is awesome. Way to go, Otto, with the encouragement. Have yourself three career daughters.
Yeah, we love a supportive papa.
Now, he read this letter, but things were still opening up for women in the profession. There had been a few women before her, notably Ethel and Bessie Charles, sisters who became the first two women elected to REBA, or the Royal Institute of British Architects, in 1898 and 1900. But at this time, the AA, which we've mentioned on the show before, the Architectural Association, was still not accepting women students and had denied entry to Ethel and Bessie. So they had trained in architects' offices and on their own, and they did do a few classes at other institutions, but never graduated with a formal degree.
Big mistake, AA. Huge.
Huge. But also, different country, same nonsense. A lot of early pioneers had to go this route to learn about architecture. So here we are.
Yeah. Gertrude got connected with Annie Hall, another woman who, similar to the Charles sisters, had trained under architects before opening her own practice. She told Gertrude that she should try to go study at the University College of London, or UCL.
Making moves.
I was so confused by this at first because I thought, why does Annie Hall sound so familiar? And thought, like, the Woody Allen movie?
Yeah, exactly.
With beloved, you know, Diane Keaton. R.I.P. And then a Google search told me that there is an Annie Hall that is alive, actually, but looks too young to know Miss Gertrude. Because she's also, like, a designer. So,
oh.
But then I found the Annie Hall that was an architect during Gertrude's time. But that's it. So they were just, like, they knew each other. She also did it this route. Became an architect via apprenticeship.
Yeah.
Very coincidental names.
There are a lot of Annie Halls.
A lot of Annie Halls. But I'm glad Gertrude got the encouragement.
So UCL did accept women to their architecture school, luckily. Ethel Charles had done a few courses there. I mentioned she took some classes at different places. So the courses at UCL included studio, architectural history, German, math, Latin, and Roman history. Gertrude enrolled in 1915. There were two women in the class ahead of her and three in her class. In 1918, she was the only one of these five women who finished the degree program. She sat her exams as the only woman in a group of 500 men and graduated, making her the first woman to graduate from UCL's Bartlett School of Architecture with a BA.
Amazing. I wonder what happened to the other five, but it's not time to worry about that. It's time to celebrate Gertrude.
Marriage and babies, probably. That's what happened.
The patriarchy.
Yeah. But yes, let's celebrate Gertrude.
That's right. She did write that she was very alone during school and really wanted to have female friends. She joined the College Dramatic Society and was able to make some friends outside of the architecture school.
Good for you, Gertrude. Making friends outside of architecture school, finding the girl gang we all need.
Yeah.
In 1919, after graduating, she began working for Horace Field in London. Now, I mentioned that the Charles sisters had gained REBA membership 20 years earlier, but no other women had become REBA members since then.
What's gonna happen?
Are we gonna go back into some BS? Or were women just, like, not interested?
You know they were.
That's right. Okay, but first, we will take a pause in our story about Gertrude to talk about the history of REBA.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, let's get into this collective impact.
So the Royal Institute of British Architects, or REBA, it's essentially the UK's AIA, right? It's a professional membership body for architects primarily in the UK, but also around the globe. REBA was founded in 1834. As the Institute of British Architects in London for the, quote, general advancement of civil architecture and for promoting and facilitating the acquirement of the knowledge of the various arts and sciences connected therewith.
Fancy.
Very fancy.
Then in 1837, they were granted a royal charter by William IV and renamed the Royal Institute of British Architects in London. They dropped the London distinction in 1892. The Royal Charter has been supplemented and eventually it was replaced with a single charter in 1971, which remains today.
Makes sense. They want to open itself up to other cities or countries nearby. So it's not just like London, but like all of Great Britain. The Royal Charter, it basically means it's like an organization that is recognized by the monarchy. So it's kind of like all the different sirs and ladies that get like knighted. So this is that version, but for a group. But being a single charter, it's, I guess, legitimizes the group, so to speak, as like a national organization.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And all of their bylaws have to be approved by the Privy Council. And REBA members are considered charter members of REBA. That's like a term that they use.
Oh,
gotcha.
So in 1948, the Royal Gold Medal was established by Queen Victoria. It's an annual award for substantial contribution to international architecture awarded by the British monarch. Similar to the AIA Gold Medal, being awarded for a body of work rather than an individual project.
Ooh, nice.
In 1934, REBA moved its headquarters to 66 Portland Place in London, and the building was opened by King George V and Queen Mary. The offices remain there today, and the REBA Library remains one of the three largest architectural libraries in the world today.
That's really cool. I had to look up which was the largest, and it turns out to be the Avery Architectural and Fine Arts Library at Columbia University in New York. Ladies, we should check these out.
OMG, all of these sound cool. Adding all of these to my ARC venture list.
So while REBA started as a UK-based organization, I mentioned before that membership is not limited to the UK, and they have members around the world. They have 12 regional groups within the UK, but then there are 4 international branches under REBA International. There's REBA Americas, REBA Asia and Australia, REBA Europe, and REBA Middle East and Africa.
I had no idea. So we could be chartered members of REBA today?
I'm sure you can if you pay the membership fee.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to do the testing, like, you know, have to, similar to like if you want to be a licensed architect in the US, right?
Oh.
So instead of having NCARB and AIA, it's all one. So REBA is the licensing board?
No, they have an NCARB equivalent called ARB, or the Architectural Registration Board. It's very similar. Anyway.
Well, the point is that we could.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So back in 1898, REBA admitted its first female member, as we mentioned, Ethel Charles. And then in 1900, its second, Bessie Charles. Now we're jumping back to 1922. 22 years after Bessie gets admitted, no other woman has been admitted to REBA. So Horace Field, who Gertrude was working for, along with 2 other men, proposed Gertrude to become an associate member of REBA.
Yeah, allies.
Love to see it.
Yes. So she passed the exams and she was admitted to REBA along with 2 other women that same year, Eleanor K.D. Hughes and Winifred Ryle, who had been able to study at the AA when they finally opened to women in 1917.
Nice. Progress is happening.
And I just love that she wasn't alone.
Yeah. So on Gertrude's nomination papers to REBA, the standard form says, "We, the undersigned, do, from our personal knowledge of him, propose and recommend him for election." Her form, the him, was crossed out and handwritten her had been added. I think she did that.
Good.
I accept that.
Mm-hmm.
This also reminds me of Marion Manley, episode 72, because in her AIA certification, she was the first woman to become an AIA member. She was the first AIA member of the state of Florida. And in her certification, there's all kinds of hims, he's, and sirs written all over that thing.
Yeah. So. All right. So now Gertrude is a REBA member. She's working. She's doing her thing. In 1923, she gets hired by Women's Pioneer Housing.
Ooh.
Who dis?
So Women's Pioneer Housing was founded by Etheldred Browning in 1920. It was founded to help provide housing to single women post-World War I, especially those who were working, because it was like more single women who were professional now, right?
Etheldred Browning was a suffragette from Dublin. Very highly involved throughout her life in issues of women's rights and housing in Ireland and in England.
Ooh, cool.
So WPH bought houses in London in good neighborhoods, often like big houses, and then they would convert them into small flats or rented rooms with shared bathrooms or bedsits.
Mm-hmm.
They brought Gertrude on to design the conversions of these large homes. So her first project was at 62 Ladbroke Grove, and she made it into 8 flats.
What a great project to have.
Yeah, I like their mission, and I love this project.
Yeah.
Hey, designers and curious minds. Ever wondered about the stories hiding within your building's walls? I'm Carrie Seaburn, structural engineer and host of Unstruct, the podcast that decodes and simplifies major concepts of structural design. Behind the math and physics, structural engineering simply predicts building behavior. Join me as we simplify the complex, making structural design accessible to everyone.
Nowadays, instead of measuring it via cost, we're saying, well, what about carbon, you know? We've got 2 levers now that we can, if an architect has an inefficient design, we can hit them with 2 levers, if you like.
The official casualty figure is 55,000. Everybody I talked to told me that the actual figure is at least three times as much. And I believe that. I mean, seeing what I saw, Turkish codes are good and they have been improving, but compliance was completely lacking.
Fluent in steel, concrete, masonry, and timber design, I'll bring you leading engineers to dissect the tales behind their building structure. Whether you're an architect, contractor, engineer, or just love a good story, this podcast is for you.
Yeah, beam penetrations. That's a fun topic on this project.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Unstruct. From within your walls, hear the story behind how your building stands today.
The next year, she was made the official architect of WPH. A committee member said, "Miss Leverkus is the architect to the society, and therefore no other architect should be employed without the special sanction of the Committee of Management."
Yes, put that on your LinkedIn, Miss Leverkus.
Check, check. Miss Architect to the Society.
Meanwhile, Gertrude had gone back to school at UCL and got her certificate in town planning in 1925.
Okay, Miss Town Planner.
Mm-hmm. Gertrude went on to work on 40 different conversions while working for WPH. She also became a resident of a WPH property at 65 Harrington Gardens. Her mother passed away in 1930, so she moved to this address and worked out of it until her retirement.
That's so cool that she lived in one of her own projects.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, 40 conversions. And yeah, it is cool to live in your own project.
Right. So in addition to WPH work, she designed many homes around England and also an extension of the McCall Maternity Hospital in Clapham, London.
Ah, Lizzie, you and Gertrude could have swapped house design stories.
True. When World War II broke out, Gertrude helped design air raid shelters for the WPH properties. She joined the Women's Volunteer Service and helped organize evacuees, gather supplies, collect aluminum, and she was the official organizer of the Borough of Holkham. She also worked as an inspector of stately homes to decide which ones would be requisitioned for the war effort. Because, you know, they were using a lot of these, like, big houses in the country for war-related activities or as, like, hospitals and things like that.
Wow. Staying so involved.
She was. I also like this inspector of stately homes initiative.
Yeah.
This does remind me of one of our ladies. I think it was like one of our Dorothys, like maybe Dorothy Hughes, that also donated her homes to the war efforts.
That's right. I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
In 1943, because of her town planning training, she was hired by the town planning office in West Ham in London as a housing architect. They were testing out what would become the Greater London Plan by Patrick Abercrombie.
That is awesome. Okay, so the Greater London Plan was basically like a big reset button for after World War II. You're dealing with displaced people due to the war, an increasing population. So this plan was meant to combat that, right? While also addressing things like transportation, parks and schools, industrial and commercial things were more intentionally placed. The Green Belt and towns like Harlow, Stevenage, and later Milton Keynes are the result of this. It sounds like a great project to be a part of, because I think when you think of London's like urban fabric, it's the result of the Greater London Plan.
Yes, exactly. So in 1948, she was hired by Norman and Dauburn, who were working on the Crawley and Harlow, as you mentioned, new towns. Gertrude worked on this project and was part of the team that converted farmland into these neighborhoods, designing homes and flats to help alleviate the crowded cities.
Harlow, there you go.
Important.
Gertrude was a proponent to avoid cities just sprawling outwards forever and advocated for satellite towns like Crawley. She designed 735 houses in Pound Hill, the largest neighborhood of Crawley.
I wonder what her, Jane Jacobs, and Catherine Bauer would sit down and talk about at happy hour.
at the local pub.
Yeah, that would be a great conversation to be a fly on the wall for.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're jumping back in time to go back to Gertrude with Reba, okay?
Okay.
Whiplash.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's right. We were talking about Reba.
Okay, so in 1931, Gertrude was elected to be a fellow of Reba. She was the second woman elected after Gillian Harrison, who was elected a few weeks before her.
Pop the champagne.
Bring out the cake.
Gertrude was a strong feminist and wanted to support women in the profession and a way to network with them. So in 1932, she established the Reba Women's Committee.
Sign me up.
Let's go.
It was originally more of a social club for women in the organization, but it shifted to be a group that promoted the interests of women in the profession, helping graduates to job search and noting cases of discrimination. They also gathered data about women in the profession and ran exhibitions of women's work to raise their visibility.
Really wonderful how this evolved to be an agent for positive change.
I just like how it started out as a social club and then became so much more. Data gathering, like, come on, that's great.
Yeah. So in 1935, the committee published a report showing that 30 firms of architects were entirely run by women.
That sounds like a lot, but it's probably not. I'm curious out of how many.
That is a good question. But also, go women. For it to be 1935, that is very impressive.
Right?
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
So I tried to find out more about the committee, like, over the years. And I do know that it continued in some form through the 90s. I think it kind of ebbed and flowed in terms of, like, how active it was. But they did publish a few articles and held seminars in the 90s, so I know it was still going then. However, it seems from what I could find, and if anyone knows, please correct me, write to us. But from what I could tell, it doesn't currently still exist. I didn't have time to reach out to the Reba Library to find out more, but I do know that they have a lot of documentation on the committee throughout the years.
Well, you can still reach out to them, right? And maybe they answer in time for the wrap-up, or whenever we get a response, we share that.
Yeah, yeah. But I just mean, like, I don't have that information right now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, stay tuned, people. Perhaps something else will come up. Perhaps it won't. You got to listen to us.
Maybe we should just, you know, book in our adventure and go over there and see it for ourselves.
That's true.
Just a thought.
But on a serious note, our show is a springboard for folks to find out more info, right? So if folks know something, they can email us at shebuildspodcast@gmail.com and let us know what you know.
Well, today Reba continues to have campaigns aiming to promote gender equality in the profession. So even though the committee doesn't exist, they still have initiatives related to women in the profession. They currently have a campaign based on a 2025 report titled Build It Together, Progress and Planning Towards Gender Equity in the Architecture Profession. The report makes 47 recommendations, 20 are for Reba specifically, and they are aiming in this campaign to address 10 of them within a year and then explore the remaining 10 after that.
Would you place a link to that on the show notes? I'd like to read those.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree. I want to read this.
So in 1960, Gertrude had become an associate partner at Norman & Dobbern and decided to retire and move to Brighton.
I'm guessing she had become an associate partner before the 1960s, right? It's not like she got the promotion and then in a few months she peaced out.
In 1960, she was an associate partner.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, because, you know, it'd be funny if her goal was to become partner.
She had become, like...
Oh, by then.
Like she was, yeah.
At one point in her life.
Yeah, because it'd be funny.
I thought it was funny, like, I got a promotion, now I'm leaving, bye.
So what is she doing in Brighton? Because I know she's not doing the English version of bingo.
That's true.
Yes. No surprise, she was not idle in retirement. She joined the Regency Society, the Archaeological Society, and the British Federation of University Women. She passed away on November 8th, 1989.
I love how she joined three really important, time-consuming sounding things. Like, she could have just picked one, but no. That's not how our overachiever ladies do. What a great life of significant work and service for Gertrude.
Y'all, she was 91. She lived so much life and accomplished so much.
Yeah. So as a strong feminist, she would advocate for women in the profession and speak on it occasionally. Back in 1928, she spoke at a conference of women voters about being an architect. And she said that she experienced more bafflement than hostility from men in the profession, which I guess is better than hostility. But she told a funny story where there was a man on the job site who would like take his coat off for her to like kneel on when she was inspecting an excavation. But then as the project went on, he got so used to her as a fellow worker that he ended up inviting her to a public house, which at the time would have been more scandalous than it is today, but essentially like invited her to the pub for a drink after work.
Okay. As like a buddy, you know, as our equal.
Yeah, yeah. Like just one of the guys going for a drink, you know, like.
Okay, good. Thank you for clarifying that. Because public house, I was like, what, like the bathhouse? But also the bafflement, more bafflement than hostility sounds amazing.
Right. In another essay she wrote, "Happy is the girl who can find such a fascinating outlet for her energies as the profession of architecture. But varied must her talents and many-sided her interests. Architecture is one of the best professions in the world for those whose minds work constructively and tidily."
That's a nice description of our profession and abilities.
Agreed.
All right. We've now reached the second part of our episode, the Caryatid. A caryatid is a stone carving of a woman used as a column or a pillar to support the structure of a Greek or Greek-style building. In each episode, we choose a caryatid, a woman who's working today, furthering the profession through her work, and who ties into the historical woman of our episode. Without further ado, drum roll, please. Yemi Aladarun.
Yemi.
So Yemi is an architect in the UK who went to Kingston University in London for undergrad, grad, and postgrad degrees in architecture. After graduating, she worked in several different roles: architect, contract administrator, major projects manager, and construction design and quality manager. She says that all of these roles tied back to housing and really emphasized her focus on social housing.
Starting to feel a connection.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
She eventually moved into the public sector and has worked for several London boroughs, including as the head of Meridian Water, which is a development for the Enfield Council. This is a huge regeneration project aiming to provide 10,000 homes and 6,000 jobs for locals. She now works for the London Borough of Ealing as the Acting Assistant Director of Housing Regeneration. And honestly, this is only like a scratch at her resume. She's doing all of the things and has had so many roles.
Sounds like it. How impressive.
Good girl.
In addition to her day job, Yemi is a REBA member and has served on the Education Committee. She also currently is a non-executive board member of Women's Pioneer Housing, which is still alive and well today.
Hey.
Wow.
She's also a co-founder of Paradigm Network. Paradigm is an AEC professional network to promote Black and Asian representation within the built environment.
Ooh, I have to look them up. Incredible, everything Yemi is doing. Very impressive.
Yes, this is excellent. She is a true testament to what a caryatid is. I can see her connection with Gertrude, and it's great to see how she is continuing the efforts of promoting women in the profession. And in this case, increasing the representation of Black and Asian women as well. Love it.
All right. Before we say goodbye, we want to say thank you to CMYK for the music, John W., our technical advisor, and most of all, thank you for listening.
Remember to check out our show notes for links to all of our resources on this episode, as well as pictures of projects that we've talked about.
We hope you enjoyed learning about today's lady and caryatid, along with our banter, and that you're inspired to find out more about them and other amazing professional ladies.
Please let us know what you thought of our episode. If you enjoyed it, please help us spread the word. Tell your friends, your colleagues, your history buffs. Tell them all. Also, give us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify. write us a review. This all helps us reach a wider audience and for more people to learn about amazing ladies with us.
Your support means everything to us. If you've enjoyed our content and want other ways to help us with our mission, you can support us by visiting our website for merchandise at shebuildspodcast.com/merch.
If you don't need any more swag, but you'd still like to consider supporting the research we're doing, you can donate to us on our website, shebuildspodcast.com/donate, or you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/shebuildspodcast. You can also find links to all of these items on our website.
She Builds Podcast is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. Gable Media is curated thought leadership for an audience dedicated to building a better world. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at GableMedia.com. That's GABLmedia.com.
We are excited to hear from you and for you to come back and keep learning about bosses with us. You can email us your thoughts at SheBuildsPodcast@gmail.com. Leave a comment on our website, SheBuildsPodcast.com. Or follow us on Instagram and Facebook at SheBuildsPodcast and on X at SheBuildsPod. Bye.
Bye.
Adios.
I mean, I guess it's like FAIA.
But then I read Freeba.
Freeba.
Which I kind of like.
Yeah, me too.